today with devils, and I wanted to start off with the end, first of all. This is the end, at the end of Divine Providence. Swedenborg has some room on the page, and he writes, "Forgive me for tacking this on to fill up the rest of the page. Certain spirits climbed up out of hell by permission. You've written a lot of things you've received from the Lord, they said to me. Write a message from us too. What shall I write? I asked. Write that every spirit, good or evil, enjoys his or her own kind of pleasure. Every spirit, good or evil, enjoys his or her own kind of pleasure. The good, the pleasure of their goodness, and the evil, the pleasure of their evil. What is your pleasure? The pleasure of committing adultery, theft, fraud, deceit. What are those pleasures like? To others, they come across as the smell of feces, or the stink of cadavers, or the stench from standing pools of urine. But they're pleasing to you? Very. Then you're like the unclean animals that pass their lives in such filth. If we are, we are, but those things are perfumed to our nostrils. What other message do you want me to write? I asked. Say that everyone is allowed the enjoyment of his or her own pleasure, even the filthiest kind, so-called, as long as it doesn't victimize good spirits or angels. But since we can't help making their lives miserable, we're driven away and thrown down into hell, where we endure dreadful torment. Why do you inflict misery on the good? We don't have any choice. It's as if a madness takes over whenever we see angels or feel the godly atmosphere around them. Then you're nothing more than beasts, I said, at which a madness overcame them, a fury presenting itself as a blaze of hatred to which, to prevent them from causing any harm, they were hauled back into hell. Just to fill up a little space at the end of the page. And I wanted to read one of the more real descriptions of devils taken from the New Testament. They went across a lake. This is from Mark chapter 5. They went across a lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained, hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Day and night among the tombs and in the hills he would cry out and cut himself with stones. Then he saw Jesus from a distance. He ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted out at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. And that's not how it ends, though. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. So we have one short play and one longer play. I need four people. A man from the Iron Age. How about four for the man from the Iron Age? We need Swedenborg. How about Sally? We need the narrator and an angel. And I highlighted them this time for you, so your part is highlighted. And away we go.
Give it to the people of the age of iron. 2 days later, the angel spoke with me again. Let us complete the course of the ages. The last age remains, which is named after iron. The people of this age live in the north, on the western side, extending inward or in a latitudinal direction towards the interior. They all come from early inhabitants of Asia who had the ancient word and who worshipped according to it. Consequently, they lived before the advent of our Lord into the world. This is apparent from the writings of ancient authors in which those times are given these names. The same ages are meant by the statue seen by Nebuchadnezzar, whose head was of gold, its breast and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron and its feet of iron and also clay.
Narrator. The angel told me this on the way, which was shortened and speeded along by the changes of state produced in our minds according to the character of the inhabitants through whom we passed. For intervals of space, and therefore distances in the spiritual world, are appearances in accordance with states of mind. When we lifted our eyes, behold, we were in a forest consisting of beech trees, horse chestnuts and oaks. And when we looked around, we caught sight of bears there to the left and leopards to the right. When I wondered at this, the angels said,
they are not really bears or leopards, but people who guard these inhabitants of the north. With their noses, they sniff the atmospheres of life emanating from passers-by and rush upon all who are spiritual because the inhabitants are natural. People who only read the word and take nothing of doctrine from it at a distance look like bears, and people who confirm falsities from it look like leopards.
But having seen us, they turned away, and we passed on. Out of the forest we saw scrubland, and then grassy plains divided into fields and surrounded by boxwood. After this, the ground sloped down into a valley in which there were cities, one after another. We passed by several of them and entered into one great one. Its streets were irregular, so too were its houses. These were built out of bricks with timbers in between and plastered. In the squares we found chapels made of cut limestone, with the lower part of the buildings below ground level and the upper part above. We went down three steps into one of these, and around on the walls we saw idols in various forms, and a lot of people on their knees worshipping them. In the middle of them was a choir, out of which the tutelary god of the city projected so that his head could be seen. As we were leaving, the angel said to me,
among the ancient peoples who lived in the Silver Age, these idols were images representative of spiritual truths and moral virtues, and that when a knowledge of correspondence was faded from memory and became extinct, these images became first objects of worship and afterwards were adored as deities. This was the origin of idolatries.
When we were outside the chapel, we observed the people and their dress. They had steel-like faces, grey-coloured, and they were dressed like clowns, with skirts around their hips and thighs, hanging down from a shirt tied at the chest. And on their heads they had the cocked hats of sailors.
But enough of this. We are here to be instructed about the marriages of the people of this age.
So we entered into the house of an important person who had on his head a turreted headdress. He received us kindly.
Man from the Iron Age, come in and let us have a conversation together.
We went into the entrance hall and sat down there. Then I asked him about the marriages in the city and general area.
We do not live with one wife, but some people have two or three wives, and some more. This is because the variety, submissiveness, and honour entertain us, as though we were kings. These are the things we have from our wives when there is more than one. With only one wife, we would not have the pleasure of variety, but boredom resulting from sameness. we would not have the deference of submission, but the irritation of equality. Nor would we have the bliss of ruling with its accompanying honour, but the annoyance of struggling for superiority. After all, what is a woman? Is she not born subject to a man's will, and born to serve and not to rule? For this reason, every man here in his own house is like a royal majesty, because this is what we like. It is also the blessing of our life.
Swedenborg said, "Where then is true married love, which forms two souls into one, and joins minds together and blesses a person? This love cannot be a divided love. It is, if it is, it becomes a passion which evaporates and passes away."
"I do not understand what you are saying. What else blesses a person but the rivalry of wives for the honour of being first with her husband?"
Saying this, the man went into his harem and opened its double doors. But a libidinous odour came out of it which stank like a cesspool. This was the result of polygamous love, which is matrimonial and at the same time licentious. I got up, therefore, and closed the doors.
Swedenborg said, "How can you remain in this land when none of you have truly true married love, and when you also worship idols?"
"With respect to marital love, we are so violently jealous of our wives that we do not allow anyone to enter our houses past the entrance halls. And where there is jealousy, there is also love. As for the idols, we do not worship them, but we cannot think about the God of the universe except through images presented to our eyes. For we cannot raise our thoughts above the sense impressions of the body, nor can we raise our thoughts about God above the visible things we can see."
Swedenborg said, Do your idols not have various forms? How can they present a vision of a one God?"
"It's a mystery to us. Something having to do with the worship of God lies hidden in every form."
"You are merely sensual, carnal people. You do not have any love for God, nor any love for a married partner that derives anything from spiritual love. And it is these loves that together shape a human being, and from being sensual make him heavenly."
When I said this, I saw through the doorway what seemed to be a flash of lightning.
"What is it? What is this?"
"Lightning like this is a signal to us that the Ancient One of the East is coming, who teaches us about God, that he is one, alone the Almighty, who is the first and the last. He also warns us not to worship idols, but only to look on them as images representing virtues that emanate from the one God, which together form a worship of him. This Ancient One is our angel, whom we respect and listen to. He comes to us and raises us up whenever we fall into a hazy worship of God owing to some delusion regarding the images."
Having heard this, we departed from the house and from the city. And on the way, from the things we had seen in heaven, we formed conclusions regarding the course and progress of true married love. With respect to its course, we observed that it had moved in a circle from the east to the south, from there to the west, and from there into the north. With respect to its progress, we saw that it had declined as it went. In other words, that it had been celestial in the east, spiritual in the south, natural in the west, and sensual in the north. We also noted as well that it had declined in the same measure that the love and worship of God declined. Consequently, we formed this conclusion, that true married love in the first age was like gold, in the second age like silver, in the third age like bronze, and in the fourth age like iron, and that at last it ceased to exist.
The angel said, "Nevertheless, I am sustained by the hope that the God of heaven, who is the Lord, will revive this love, because it is possible for it to be revived."
And the question that Brian asked about this passage yesterday was, this is heaven? And it's, to me, interesting that they are awaiting the arrival of this spirit from the ancient ones who is going to come and tell them more. And while they certainly aren't in anything that I would think of as heavenly, they're in some kind of limited disorder. And any other thoughts?
Well, it was before really the second coming happened, wasn't it?
Well, this is in Conjugal Love, so it's
after.
Pretty far along.
But I mean, you know, there was a lot of opening up over that time, so hopefully they were, you know, they would be led to more.
Yeah. It seemed like they're prepared to learn.
Didn't the arrival of Swedenborg himself be the person coming from the east that they were looking for?
It doesn't say that,
no.
But certainly that's one of the functions that Swedenborg, as I understand it, is doing by bringing these two teachings into the world, where they can then affect judgment in the spiritual world.
Isn't it amazing that man from the Iron Age, he just spoke totally unselfconsciously about what he was thinking about God and about women and marriages. And while I didn't necessarily hear hatred in that, I certainly heard incredible self-centeredness. Mm.
But it's a lot. Those opinions are very prevalent today.
Yes.
And an awful lot of people would live like that if they could get away with it. And what amused me was how they talked about the irritation of having to live in an equal relationship.
Yes, yeah.
And the annoyance of having to, you know, allow this and allow that, so that he wasn't aware of it.
I'm just going to start passing out there. There are actually 9 people involved in this. If you haven't read and would like to, would you raise your hand? These are 9 different people. They're shorter than some of the other readings, although not all. We'll let you be the narrator. Erin, would you like to be Swedenborg?
That'll be similar.
Here's an angel. Short part, spirit from the crowd.
Right. I still got five.
Oh, okay. Easter.
This is first person from the age of iron and clay. And I took a little liberty with signing because they don't necessarily. There's a one-liner. Another one-liner. Here's a so-called wise man. Siobhan, would you like to be a so-called wise man? There we go. This one's a little longer than we've done, so. On Gail, starting with the narrator.
Please identify yourself.
Yeah. The same angel as before, sent by God to pain to the ancient people to lift the 4 angels for gold, silver, copper, and iron. The same angel appeared again to me and said to me,
Angel, you would like to see the age that followed those ancient ages, to find out what it was like and what it is still like today. Follow me, then you will see. These are the people of whom Daniel prophesied when he said, a kingdom will arise after those other 4 in which iron will be mixed with miry clay. They will mingle together through the seed of man, and they will not appear to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. The seed of man, through which iron will be mingled with clay, and yet without their appearing together, this seed means the truth of the word falsified.
After these words I followed him, and on the way he told me this. Only, he said, in the border region between the south and the west, but at a great distance beyond those who lived in the previous 4 ages, and also deeper down. So we continued through the south, to a region bordering on the west, and we passed through a dreadful forest, but we found pools of water there from which crocodiles ran their heads, gaping at us with jaws wide open and showing their teeth. And between the pools was a horrible dog, some of them with 3 heads like Cerberus, some of them with 2 heads, all of them hideous mouths and watching up with savage eyes as we passed by. Entering the western part of this area, we also saw dragons and leopards like the ones described in the book of Revelation, chapters 12, 3 and 13, 2.
All these wild beasts you have seen are not beasts, but correspondent and thus representative forms of the lusts that motivate the inhabitants we are going to visit. Those hideous dogs represent the lusts themselves. The crocodiles, their deceits and deceptions. The dragons and leopards, their falsities and corrupt feelings towards things that have to do with worship. The inhabitants thus represented, however, do not live just the other side of the forest, but beyond a great desert that lies between. To keep them completely away and separate from the inhabitants of the preceding ages. Moreover, they are altogether alien, totally different from those people, those other people. Indeed, they have heads above their breasts above their loins above their feet, like the earliest people. But there is not a bit of gold in their heads, or of silver in their breasts, or of bronze in their loins. In fact, there is not a bit of just plain iron in their feet. Instead, they have iron mixed with clay in their heads, both of these mixed with bronze in their breasts, both of these also mixed with silver in their loins, and these mixed with gold in their feet. But by this inversion, they have been transformed from human beings into caricatures of human beings, in which nothing inwardly holds together. For what has been uppermost has become lowermost, so that what was the head has become the heel, and vice versa. Viewed from heaven, they look to us like play actors who turn their bodies upside down, support themselves on their elbows and thus move about. Or they look like animals that lie upside down on their backs, raise their feet in the air, and digging their heads into the ground from that position, look up at the sky.
We passed through the forest and proceeded into the desert, which was no less horrible. It consisted of piles of rocks with pits in between, and it was gripped poisonous snakes and vipers with fiery serpents. This whole desert kept sloping downward, and as we descended by a long decline, and at last we came to a valley inhabited by the people of that region and age. We saw huts here and there, which finally appeared to come together and be joined in the form of a city. We went into the city, and behold, the houses were constructed out of charred tree branches mortared together with clay. The roofs were made of black pine knots. The streets were irregular, all narrow at first, but widening as it went, becoming finally quite broad and terminating in squares. Consequently, there were as many squares as there were streets. Darkness fell as we entered the city, but because the sky was not visible. We looked up, therefore, and were given light by which to see. I then asked the people I encountered.
Swedenborg. Can you see, since the sky does not appear above you?
Spirit from the crowd. What sort of question is this? We see clearly. We walk in full light.
Darkness to them is light, and light to them is darkness, as it is for nocturnal birds, for they look downwards instead of upwards.
We went into some of the shacks here and there. In each we saw a man with his woman. And we asked whether all of them here lived each in his own house with only one wife. But they replied to this with a hiss.
What do you mean with only one wife? Why not ask whether we have with only one harlot? What is a wife but a harlot? According to our laws, we are not allowed to commit whoredom,
with more than just one woman, but still it is not dishonourable or shameful for us to do so with more than one, provided we do it away from the house. We boast about it with each other. In this way we enjoy license and its pleasure more than polygamists do. Why is having more than one wife denied to us, when it has been permitted in the past and is permitted today in the whole world around us? What is life with just one woman but captivity and imprisonment? But here we break open the bar of this prison, and so rescue ourselves from slavery and set ourselves free. Who is angry with a prisoner if he liberates himself when he can?
You speak, my friend, like one devoid of religion. What person endowed with any power of reason does not know that adulterous affairs are profane and hellish, and that marriages are sacred and heavenly? Are not adulterous relationships found among devils in hell, and marriages among angels in heaven? Have you not read the six commandments in the Decalogue, and in Paul, that adulterers can by no means come into heaven?
Had this house laughed heartily, had he looked at me as a simpleton, almost even as insane, but at the very moment, Bessie came running from the headman of the city and said,
"The messenger, bring the two strangers to the city square, and if they will not come voluntarily, drag them there. We saw them under the dark cover of daylight. They have come here in secret. They are spies."
The reason we seem to be under dark cover is that we were in the light of heaven, and the light of heaven to them is darkness, while the darkness of hell to them is light. This is because they regard nothing as sinful, not even adultery, and consequently they see falsity altogether as truth. Falsity shines with light in hell, in the eyes of satanic spirits, while truth darkens their eyes like the gloom of night.
We will not be forced. Stay less dragged to the city square, but we will go with you voluntarily.
So he went, and behold, found a great crowd there. From it came some lawyers who whispered in our ear,
"Take care that you do not say anything against religion, against our form of government, or contrary to good manners."
We will only speak in favour of them and in accordance with them. Then we ask, "What is your religion in regarding to marriage?" At this, the crowd began to murmur, and they said,
"What concern do you have here with marriage? Marriages are marriages."
"What is your religion in regard to licentious relationships?"
At this, the crowd began to murmur again.
"What concern do you have here with licentious relationships? Illicit affairs are illicit affairs. He who is without guilt, let him throw the first stone."
"Does religion teach regarding marriages that they are sacred and heavenly, and regarding adulterous affairs that they are profane and hellish?"
In response to this, many in the crowd guffawed, mocked and jeered, saying,
"Ask our priests about matters of religion, not us. We accept without comment whatever they say, since nothing of religion falls within the ability of the understanding to judge. Have you not heard that the understanding is devoid of reason and the mysteries on which the whole of religion is based? Besides, what do our actions have to do with religion? Is it not the pious murmurings of the heart that make souls blessed? Murmurings about expiation, satisfaction, and imputation, and not works?"
But then some of the so-called wise men of the city came over and said,
"So-called wise men, get away from here. The crowd is becoming inflamed. There will be a riot in a minute. Let us talk about this by ourselves. There is an alley behind the courthouse. Let us go back there. Come with us."
So we followed, and then we asked where we came from and what our business was there.
"We have come to be instructed about marriage, to find out whether or not marriages among you are sacred unions as they were among the ancient people who lived in the golden, silver and copper ages."
"What do you mean, sacred unions? Are they not deeds of the flesh and the night?"
"Are they not also deeds of the spirit? and what the flesh does impelled by the spirit, is that not spiritual? Moreover, everything that the spirit does, it does from a marriage goodness of truth. It is not this spiritual marriage that enters into the natural marriage. Is it not the spiritual marriage that enters into the natural marriage that exists between husband and wife?
You probe and you find the matter too much. You leap over rational considerations to spiritual ones. Who can begin there, then descend, and thus form a judgment about anything?
Second so-called wise men, perhaps you have the wings of an eagle and can soar to the uppermost regions of the sky and look down on such matters, but we cannot.
So then after the Taras, from the height or region to which the ideas of the mind drew the lot, whether they knew or are able to know that such things exist as the true married love of one man and one wife, into which have been gathered all the blessings, felicities, delights, gratifications, pleasures of heaven. Moreover, that this love comes from the Lord according to people's reception of goodness and truth from him, thus according to the state of the church. Hearing this, they turned away and said,
these men are crazy. They go into outer space with their rational faculties, form empty conjectures, and shower us with nutty speculations.
We will give a straight answer to your airy conjectures and dreams.
What does true married love have in common with religion and with being inspired by God? Does that love not exist in everyone according to the condition of his sexual powers? Is it not found among people who are outside the church as well as among people who are in the church? Among Gentiles as well as among Christians? In fact, among impious people as well as among pious ones. Does the vigor of that love in everyone not come either from hereditary or from good health or from temperance of life or from the warmth of the climate? And can it not also be strengthened and stimulated by drugs? In the same love, is the same love not found in animals, especially in birds, which mate in pairs? Is that love not a matter of the flesh? What does a matter of the flesh have to do with the spiritual state of the church? Does that love with a wife, in its ultimate expression, differ one bit from love with a harlot, in its ultimate expression? Is the lust not the same, and the delight the same? It is harmful, therefore, to trace the origin of true married love from the sacred things of the church.
You are reasoning from the hate of lasciviousness, and not from true married love. You do not know at all what true married love is, because among you that love is cold. We are convinced by what you have said that you have come from the age that is named after and consists of iron and clay, and do not cohere according to the prophecy of Daniel 2:43. For you make true married love and licentious love the same thing. Can these two cohere any more than iron and clay? People believe you are wise and call you wise, yet you are anything but wise.
Inflamed with anger at these words, they began to cry out, call the crowd and throw us out. But then, by a power given to us by the Lord, we stretched out our hand, and suddenly fiery serpents, vipers, and poisonous snakes came from the desert, and dragons too, and they invaded and filled the city, so that the inhabitants became frightened and fled away.
New people keep coming from earth to this region every day, and the previous inhabitants are by turns removed and cast down into chasms in the west, which at a distance look like lakes of fire and brimstone. The people there are all adulterers, both spiritually and naturally.
We won't leave you there, but let's pause a moment to shake the dust from off our feet. Process any feelings about this reading.
I found this rather I'm trying to imagine what we're talking about, new people coming into the church. If they came into this reading, they think we're a bunch of weirdos. So I was getting a bit and it sounded to me, if I was trying to be as neutral as possible, does Shakespeare write this as an interesting moral, you know, a play of morals, but still a play because it's like caricatures and stuff. And I must say, I can't believe that this is what heaven's like. I'm having difficulty saying that's what's there. It's a symbolic representation, or it's a dreamer. He's crafted a very clever little, you know, play, which Shakespeare would have done.
But, well, this isn't heaven. This is actually taking place in the part of the spirit world where people are being allowed to express their true inner nature, and then they get separated. And so these people are on their way down into hell, where they will live the life that they're describing here. One of the things that I find interesting about this is I don't have to go very far in my associations to find people who would talk like this today. If they felt free to do that.
It sounds like reading the newspaper.
But again, this is about me.
Yes.
This is about me. And you know, what is the use of something like this? It's a little bit more difficult for me to relate to because it is written about. It is written from the point of view of the male gender. The spirits are the male gender, and they're expressing hellish. Their hellish ideas in their own form of sexuality, or how they think of themselves as sexual beings. It's very basic, but still, I have to pick out, you know, in the previous one, it was disrespect of other people, and, you know, supreme self-centeredness, and in this one, it is. Just the total separation of religion from life, and not being able to see how the Lord applies in all parts and forms of my life and everywhere on earth. So it's a true denial of the Lord, and you know, those are the messages, and that's the interface when I'm in those kinds of states. That's the interface coming out. That's what my nature will look like and express when I'm in that kind of state of, and what I'm doing is denying the divine.
I love what you just said, Mary. I really do, because Helen, nothing said doesn't apply to us. Nothing given by the Lord is about other people. I believe it's about us. And I have to say that though I hope it's not a constant, I can certainly identify with that total separation of my sexual interests and as a teenager, as a young man, and occasionally when I dip back into it. Even now, I can think along the lines that that's private and to myself, and it's got nothing to do with anybody else. At least it's all got anything to do with God. So I'm really appreciative of Mary just reminding. It comes back to looking at myself. Another way of saying is that all revelation is a mirror. I remember giving a children's talk once, and I had mirrors in my Bible, and I just turned to the kids and said, look, I always want you to remember the Bible's a mirror. Read it for what it reflects back to you about yourself. So I understand, and I do agree with you, you know, that, you know, should somebody come in there, I might go, what are they talking about here? But if you could just put it in context and say, be honest with yourselves and see if you don't rock around in that area sometimes. Yes.
I think what you say about it being stereotypical is a reflection of how life, as it descends more and more into the external, becomes more mechanical, unthinking, and it does actually become stereotypes of certain conditions. Just taking all, like the thing that struck me about all of these readings from yesterday through to today is what's really being described is the inflow of life from what is inmost to what is outermost. So removing the idea of person, you then start to see that what's been spoken about are levels of our own mind and how the life, how the Lord's life gets held at each of those levels, and the idea of us as a person in that is that given that information, you are able now to recognize where you're sitting in some level of life. So if it was, you know, we know that the writings are incredibly detailed, but the stereotypical elements too are very helpful in terms of getting your bearings, because if it's all detail, you know, it becomes difficult to navigate that. Now, my own view, my own perspective on it, never forget that in order to enter the spiritual world, Swedenborg's spiritual eyes had to be open. What is he looking at? He's looking into himself. This is not some objective thing. He's looking into his own levels of thoughts and affections, generalizing principles and representing them, because they are general and they do apply to everyone.
Could I just ask a question, really, in that looking at that as general levels, and Swedenborg was looking at, say, the hereditary or contemporary beliefs of his day in Sweden, which he did speak about quite a lot as being absolutely very much like that. So then if people, and just externalizing it for a moment, go to the spiritual world, and they are unregenerated people who have lived in this type of environment and carry these beliefs, and to them it's perfectly all right, because that's the way, especially the aristocracy in Europe at the time, very much lived like that.
Yes.
And had that attitude towards women and towards sexuality. So isn't there a possibility, because my word is hope, isn't there a possibility that in that realm, if they're open to teaching, they can regenerate to heaven?
The possibility is always open, whether a person takes up.
I realise that in general, but in specific, in that realm that he's describing, it would seem, if you look at it, there's no possibility they're going to go into the fiery chasms. But it would seem holding on to other parts of the teaching.
Yeah. I was wondering what was keeping the women there, because it was done very much from the man's point of view, but. I mean, what was keeping the women there? Were they?
Well, why was that woman agreed to become the 10th wife of Zuma in South Africa?
Because of the way they're taught and live in that area.
You know, you've got a whole. I don't know. I don't have an answer, but I.
I mean,
it is happening now. What we just read here is happening now.
Oh, yeah, happening.
Yeah. It's like thieves are brought up in a family of thieves, and they turn out to be thieves. So women are brought up in that arena, and to be a tenth wife might be quite a coup, rather than being a total servant.
I just wanted to respond to what you said at first. Isn't there a possibility? When I look at the work Conjugal Love or Married Love as a whole, there are quite a few chapters at the end that are talking about this
disorders. Disorders.
The disorders. All this. The and I once sat down and read that as a whole, and the overwhelming message to me was that in order to go to hell, you have to, or I would have to choose it over and over and over and confirm it and over and over and over and over again. So that to me is a great message of hope, is that the people who get there want to be there with everything they have inside them.
The people who get there.
One thought that I had about the people of the Iron Age that we read about the beginning of this session, is that they haven't made that final, so there's still some chance of opening. They are looking to be instructed. And I think that, you know, one thing we see in that is the Lord's willing to be present with people to whatever extent they'll be present with them. And people who are in that lowest level of the natural heaven, if that's where indeed they are, have most of the time living in the darkness. Most of the time they keep that David spoke about, that, you know, window open to the upper levels closed, but not all the time. And so they have some order, some restraint, even though it's pretty miserable.
Glenn?
Yeah.
Could I just ask a question here? My understanding is that all of this is taking place in the spiritual world. Swedenborg comes, this is in the west of the spiritual world, and he sees people living the way that they were described. These people haven't got any hope. They're in the spiritual world, their earthly lives are over. And they're in the spiritual world, and they're in due course they're going to be cleared out of the world of spirits, if they're there, and to their ultimate destination, which is hell. Now, there is no way that they can be regenerated once you're over on the other side.
I think, respond to that? This is where you run into problems, where you are thinking in person.
Yes,
If you think more in terms of the fact that these are people who people you, then what is of your proprium is not going to hell, it is hell. All that's happening through, you know, the Lord is fully present. And all that's happening here is that, and I think this is why it's a male perspective, it's working with the understanding. And that's why it's coming from there. It's actually giving us an understanding of levels within ourselves. And it's through that understanding, as we begin to apply it, that these levels become more and more distinct. So the descriptions, that last description, that is describing the proprium that's in us all. It's not something removed.
And we're there when we go into those states. We're building that.
And we do, you know, like it's not a state that's foreign to us. That's the point. It's actually something.
And the arguments kind of make sense, you know.
So I will let Brian say one last word, and then I want to turn it around. So.
Well, I guess if I approach this from a separate side of the board, and the people become like an it, and I reject them all. I'm glad Swedenborg had the angel on him. Because Swedenborg is experiencing a boundary where he is able to reject that and confront that. And the angel more says, like what the angel says, still I take hope that the God of heaven, who is the Lord, will resolve that one, revive that one, because it can be revived. And I think, as an experience with Swedenborg, that's certainly important, but if you're a counsellor and you're still trying to help people, and the child still exists in everybody in whatever form or shape, an angel will acknowledge that, reach to the child in the person, a counsellor will acknowledge that and see good and bad in everyone and look to try and help develop good. So some experiences are for us spiritually, I think, in reading this, to help us put up boundaries in the region. I also thank God for angels, because they have an ability to be more like children as well, and love people, and act in the space of love. And if we keep reading to the end of the story, Swedenborg and the angel actually despair for a while, and they're actually feeling something instead of challenging people. And then there's all this beautiful celebration of heaven.
Yeah, which I'm going to read some of.
Okay, no, I don't
So after this, I heard what seemed to be the sound of singing, and deeper in the east I saw a burst of light more brilliant than the first, and I asked the angel, what are they glorifying there? And the angel said, they are glorifying the Lord with these words in Daniel. I was seeing in the visions of night, and behold, with the clouds of heaven was one like the Son of Man. And to him was given dominion and a kingdom, and all peoples and nations shall worship him. His dominion is the dominion of an age which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one which shall not perish. In addition, the angel said, they are celebrating the Lord with these phrases taken from the book of Revelation. To Jesus Christ be glory and might. Behold, he is coming with clouds. He is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last, who is, who was, and who is to come, the Almighty. I looked again into the eastern sky, and a light shone over to the right, whose glow extended into the southern hemisphere. The angel said they were quoting these words in the book of Revelation. I saw a new heaven and a new earth. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride for her husband. And an angel talked with me and said, come and I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit onto a great and high mountain and showed me the city, the holy Jerusalem. Also these words, I, Jesus, am the bright and morning star, and the spirit and the bride shall say, come. And he said, I am also am coming quickly, amen. Even so, come, Lord Jesus. And he said they were quoting these words from the prophets. Let all flesh know that I, Jehovah, am your Savior and your Redeemer. And in that day, Jehovah shall become king over all the earth. In that day, there will be one Jehovah, and his name will be one. And I've skipped many other readings from the word. But when I heard these things and understood their meaning, as a result, my heart leapt. And I went home filled with joy. And there, returning from the state of my spirit into a bodily state, I wrote down what I had seen and heard, to which I now add this, that following his advent, the Lord will revive conjugal love, such as it was among the ancient people. For conjugal love comes only from the Lord, and it is found in people who are made spiritual by him through his word. That, of course, is a word of hope for each one of us.
Excellent.